Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio as the further reality of a no-deal Brexit filters through the corridors of the European Union. And it seems increasingly clear that Boris Johnson really is very much on a mission to leave. Do or die. He said it and he obviously meant it. According to The Guardian this morning, Downing Street has completely bamboozled the burghers of Brussels by insisting on a change to the deal. They are still refusing to renegotiate. Now Juncker, Tusk, Barnier and the rest of them are trapped in a cul-de-sac of their own making. Either change the deal so that we actually like it, or accept no deal on October the 31st. It's a rather delicious thing to watch, isn't it? The panic is setting in with all the Remainers, because after all, if the EU has now accepted that no deal is the default position, why won't Parliament and the MPs who don't want to leave the EU accept it as well? Surely they're going to have to, aren't they? 0344 499 1000. You can almost hear the scrambling going on behind the scenes with Messrs Campbell, Adonis and all the other sort of Ramoning crowd who are trying their very, very best to stop Brexit from actually happening at all. Coming up later on in the show, we want your parking nightmare stories as news filters out through company reports that private parking firms are raking in millions of pounds from all of us each month. Parking Eye has doubled its profits in just 3 years to 14 million quid, and they're operating at hospitals, at railway stations, at shopping centres, and all over the place in private capacities whereby you don't actually have to pay them at all. It is literally a license to print money. Something needs to be done. You can email your stories to us. You can tweet your stories to us as well, of course, at Talk Radio 0344 499 1000. Also, we'll be investigating whether evacuating Whaley Bridge residents was actually necessary and why Dame Barbara Windsor wants the government to sort out Britain's dementia care scandal. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So the Guardian, of all of the most Remain newspapers, has said this on the front page. PM intent on hard Brexit and has no desire to renegotiate, EU is told. Basically, the Guardian story from an unnamed diplomat, heaven forfend that they should use unnamed sources, apparently says that the diplomats have told the burghers of Brussels that basically this government has no intention of accepting the deal that is currently on the table. They will not compromise on it at all. David Frost, the government's new chief advisor on Europe, is said to have sought discussions on how negotiations could be reset after the UK, in their words, crashes out on the 31st of October. So they're basically having conversations behind the scenes with European diplomats saying, look, we're leaving on October the 31st. Either you give us a deal that we like the look of, or we're going anyway, so you better start making some plans for what we do after that. I think it's fantastic. I think it's very, very deliberate. I think the policy has been proven to work. Let's talk to George Pascoe-Watson now, former political editor of The Sun, now consultant, of course, with the Portland Group. George, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Hi, good morning, Mike.
Very, very kind of you to join us this morning. Now, it looks to me, and I've been saying this, you and I haven't really spoken since Boris has ascended to the highest job in the land as a Prime Minister of this nation. It seems as though the policy that he is pushing and the line that he is taking is working. He seems to have got everybody very rattled.
Well, there's no question here, Mike, that the EU is actually the body which is forcing Britain into a no-deal position. There's no question about that. Mm. The fact that they are not prepared to budge in any way, and they're making it quite clear, I think is sad. I think that they will be, in the end, the people who will end up with a no-deal, because there really is no other way. Boris has made it clear through his many ways of communicating that he does want to negotiate, he does want to have a deal, but it's the EU who said no. I think Boris is in exactly the right position. He's doing something which Theresa May never did, which is to put no deal firmly on the table. And I think what you will hear and see in the coming days and weeks is a much bigger ramping up of communication from the government to prepare for no deal as we head that way. Some people will say that's bluff. I don't think he's bluffing.
I don't think he's bluffing either. And there's a very interesting development as well on the horizon, because one of the things that he has said, of course, in the past is that the no deal is on the table, partially because the backstop has to disappear. And the backstop can be done away with, according to Boris Johnson. There are those who say you can't possibly have a hard border on Northern Ireland and it's the only way to do it, except for the fact that David Davis, a good friend of this particular station, was on Julie Hartley Brewer's show this morning. He was talking about going to another container port and watching what goes on there as far as goods coming into this country from outside of the European Union.
I also went round the port of Avonmouth a few months ago, where they have millions of tonnes of goods coming in all the time from all over the world, mostly from outside the European Union. And there's not a customs officer in sight, because, of course, this idea that there are men in uniforms, barbed wire, barriers and all the rest of it is very 20th century. It's not how things are done anymore. Everything is sort of online these days. Customs paperwork isn't paperwork at all. It's online documents, and things are cleared without people having to go into porter cabins or talk to men in uniforms at barbed wire fences. You know, so a lot of the stuff that's being whipped up at the moment is being whipped up by Remainers, who simply cannot accept that Britain's voted to leave the European Union and we're getting out on the 31st.
David Davis there talking to Julie Hartley Brewer on The Breakfast Show this morning, making it very, very clear that at Avonmouth, which is one of the biggest container ports in Europe, there are loads and loads of goods coming in on boats from all over the world. Boats coming in from outside the European Union, coming from the West Indies, coming from the South American continent, coming from North America, probably coming in from Africa as well at that point. The point is, we do not need a hard border in Northern Ireland. This whole backstop argument that the backstop is the problem and no way can we get a better deal from the European Union if they are being told to take the backstop out, it's quite simply untrue. And the Remainers, who are now absolutely being forced into a corner, are surely going to have to agree with the European Union, because if the European Union say that they accept that no deal is now the way forward, then surely Parliament has to do exactly the same. George, I must ask you, how is it possible for Parliament to now say, well, we can't go with no deal, we're going to bring the government down, we're going to vote against it, when the European Union have already more or less accepted it?
Well, that's a really good point. There's an awful lot of confusion being talked around here. Some people are claiming that Parliament can still stop no deal. I think that's highly unlikely.
Yeah.
If for no other reason, Mike, then the timings don't work. It is absolutely possible for Boris to pull down government, go to a general election, and in a period of time, there will be no effective government in this country, and that is the point where we simply leave the EU on October the 31st, come what may. You know, some MPs bravely think that they can put a government in waiting in place, but I think that's highly unlikely.
Yes, exactly right. And the other thing that I think is very clear at the moment is that Dominic Cummings is running a very tight ship. And you know a thing or two about the way that the inner workings of Downing Street can be very important to the outer workings, if you know what I mean. He seems to be absolutely clamping down on all the special advisers. He's putting pressure on the civil servants to make sure that they're not, slacking on doing their jobs properly towards getting Brexit done. And he really seems to be ruling with an iron fist.
Well, there's no question that one of the key things about Dominic Cummings as a figure is that he is a man who gets stuff done.
Yeah.
He knows how to pull the levers and persuade people to actually do things. He's not interested in talk, and he's not interested in the writing of memos and sort of chin-stroking discussions. He is brutally focused on delivering on October the 31st. And that really matters, because having a driver behind these things is often the difference that is required. And all the people who are serving in Boris Johnson's government now are of no doubt whatsoever that the only priority is October the 31st and leaving with a deal. And if no deal can be is the solution, then so it shall be. I have no doubt that we will absolutely leave. I think you'll also see, by the way, lots of build-up of spending pledges. I think we'll see more law and order. I think we'll see some education and yet more health pledges coming out in the coming days and weeks. Why? Because Boris Johnson is also smart enough to be preparing for a general election.
And what he wants to do there is prepare constituencies where the Labour Party may be weak for a potential Conservative takeover. And that is what he's planning to do in the grand scheme of things, to try and win a proper Commons majority so that he can actually lead this country.
Well, what I find interesting, and again from your experiences, former political editor of the Fleet Street newspaper and now senior partner in a communications company, you know, the sort of the narrative is all with Boris now. He's making it happen. He's doing the business, whereas people who are critical of him are sort of falling by the wayside. I mean, I watched Jeremy Corbyn yesterday talking about how, you know, the Whaley Bridge situation needed to be sorted out. Well, he's 3 days too late because it already looks like it's now being sorted out. When he starts being critical of the money being given to the NHS yesterday, nearly £2 billion, and whining that it's not new money. Well, who cares whether it's new money or old invested money or whatever it is? It's £2 billion quid. Surely everybody should be saying, well, that's good, isn't it?
Well, this is exactly right, Mike. What we have now is a prime minister with charisma, with personality, with direction and drive. And that's what you need. You often need somebody with a direction and a goal and an ambition who doesn't get caught up in the smallness of life, but actually focuses on the big ticket items. There's a real sense of drive and positivity behind what he's trying to do. I'm not saying he's going to be able to pull everything off. That would be a magic trick too far for anybody. But it does make the machine move a lot more positively and in one direction when the conductor of the orchestra has a great flamboyance and a character and a drive, and people want to get on board with doers rather than talkers.
Exactly right. And also, don't let anybody be under the misapprehension that I'm not going to give Boris Johnson a good going over when he deserves it, because I will. You know, there is a sort of an unfortunate polarisation of politics that's happened in this country where people think people like me are just kind of, you know, flag wavers for the Tory party, which I'm very much not. I certainly wasn't one for Theresa May. And I'm certainly not a flag waver for everything to do with Brexit. If Boris Johnson missteps, if he makes a mistake, I will have him for it. It's as simple as that. But it is lovely to see somebody doing their job and actually getting on with something rather than sort of apologising for it all the time.
Well, and it's very exciting to see somebody who's got boldness and braveness and courage and a decision, whether it's popular or not, to go for something. We've been so starved of that kind of approach for so many years. Firstly, with David Cameron, as he sort of plodded his way through a coalition government with the terribly drippy lefty liberals, and then a very short period of time when he had his own majority. Now we've got a guy who's got no majority, but he's still prepared to take brave steps. Now, yes. What he's trying to do there is get through this Brexit period and then have a general election where he can change the game, get some parliamentary numbers behind him, get a proper majority, and then he can begin to change the country in the way that he wants. But, you know, you've got to take your hat off and say this is much more exciting, much more interesting. And finally, we've got a guy who's got a bit between his teeth and an opinion.
Well, exactly right. And I think we're going to see some interesting manoeuvrings going on over in Brussels, don't you? Because they're clearly slightly concerned now that they are going to be, as I said, stuck up in a cul-de-sac of their own making, because they've now been given sort of Hobson's choice. They either have to provide Boris Johnson with a better deal, which inevitably will be taking away the backstop, or they'll just have to accept no deal.
Well, I think they will accept no deal, and I think a lot of EU leaders in the 27 member countries are quite uncomfortable about the way the Brussels Commission and Michel Barnier have put them into this cul-de-sac. And I think privately, a lot of these countries will be wanting to do bilateral deals with the UK on trade because their own populations, their own economies demand it. You know, there are a lot of, for instance, Polish lorry drivers. There's a massive industry in Poland who do most of their work in the UK, and they will not take kindly to being shut out if that happens because of, you know, the EU's intransigence and refusal to budge. That's just one example. There are many, many more. I'm not saying everything's going to be plain sailing, and definitely, there will be losers on both sides. But I think the dynamic in Brussels is very interesting to watch. And, of course, we're going moving to a new commission who will be taking over the reins of power at the time when we would be hoping to create a new EU trading partnership.
And I talk to you about this all the time, George, whenever we have an opportunity. Business is obviously the driver of an awful lot of the economy in this country, small business in particular. Is there a change in mood? Because the last time you and I spoke, before Boris took over, there was still a kind of uncertainty, there was still a little bit of doubt, a little bit of sort of a lack of confidence, if you like. Is that changing?
Well, it's a little bit early to say. The reality is, at least people know there's clarity here of what the Prime Minister is intending to do, and that there's absolutely no doubt that no deal is where he wants to go. And that clarity means that businesses know what it is they need to do. The difficulty, of course, is that businesses were led up the garden path back in March when we were meant to leave the last time. And spent a lot of money in preparation for that May date, and it didn't happen. And they are questioning whether or not to spend the same sort of money again. But I think that that will change in the coming days and weeks, and people will be pretty clear that we are leaving without a deal, and they'll make that preparation. You know, there has been a change in the value of sterling over the last week or so, which is uncomfortable to some.
That's but a very nice way of describing it, I must say. You should be the Chancellor.
Yes, exactly. But it's also been good for some.
Yeah.
So not everybody loses in these situations. But what that tells us is the market is pretty clear that we are going to be leaving it without a deal, and that Britain should be prepared for that. You know, business likes one thing alone, and it likes certainty. You can plan around certainty. You can't plan around uncertainty. And Boris is a great communicator and has left nobody in any doubt about what his intentions are. And that is, in some small measure, comforting to business.
Yes, quite. Now, one final thing. We're going to be talking about this a little bit later on in the show, but Lord Ashcroft's poll yesterday, which I completely ignore, basically, on the grounds that I was once told by a pollster, anything less than a sample size of 2,000 people is not worth the paper it's written on. This was an online poll conducted by Lord Ashcroft of 1,007 people, I believe, which has led to a very narrow suggestion that some people in Scotland would prefer independence over staying in the United Kingdom. I'm not buying it, for one, but of course Nicola Sturgeon's making hay and saying, well, this proves that, you know, Scotland wants independence and we need another referendum.
Well, let's see the colour of the money when it really counts. She is bound to say that when a survey like that comes out. But the reality is, if she was really pushing for it, she would be making a much more hay about it. She'd be making much more of song and dance about it. And I think that's because, yes, it is true that if Britain leaves without a deal, there is a real chance that opposition to the union and a preference to leave the United Kingdom will grow. I think that's pretty clear. Mm. At this stage, I don't think they're in that boat. Don't forget, of course, that it would have to be down to Boris Johnson as the British Prime Minister to sanction another referendum on the union in Scotland, and nothing can be done without his permission. And it's definitely not in his agenda to allow the breakup of the union.
Well, it certainly is not in his thought process, it would seem, either. George, thank you very much indeed. George Pascoe Watson there telling us about what is going on outside the Downing Street bubble.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 03444991000. Lady Alicia has joined the call to have a party on Friday, the 1st of November. Let's have street parties, as Mike Graham says. Let's do it, she says. Jeremy says on the front page of, on the front page of my Twitter, talking about the Scottish independence poll. Is that why the poll showed 52% support for it and 45% voted for it last time? Sounds like a lot of noise. I think that's true. I mean, certainly there were lots of polls before the last Scottish independence independence referendum in which it was suggested that the UK was going to win. And in fact, they didn't leave. And in fact, they lost altogether. Alan says, what price freedom? A case of Sussex sparkling white wine shared with friends and family on the 31st of October. And Gary says, will Remainers soon be called rejoiners? That could be the new phrase for them, couldn't it? 0344 499 1000. Let's speak to Nicola, who's in Newport, wants to talk about the dementia problems in society. Nicola, hi, very good morning.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for calling. What do you want to tell us?
I was my father's carer. He had vascular dementia and has his illness increased rapidly in the last 6 months of his life. It was very hard to like entertain him in the house during the day.
Sure.
There was nothing really we could do. He just wanted to wander and all the time.
Yes.
So we found there was a private provision that a day centre. So he would go there like 10 till 4. But obviously we had to fund that at a cost of like £200 a week.
Right, okay. And how long did you have to do that for?
For about 5 months,
right.
Because unfortunately his illness took on and he passed away.
That's quite a lot of money, though, isn't it?
It is. Social services do in Newport do provide the same provision. However, the waiting list is humongous.
Right.
And he did go with the social services one day a week, but then we had to also pay an additional £80 a week because we had to have carers in twice a day to help us.
Right.
So on top of the private provision, we were also paying social services as well. But the differences from the social service day centre to the private day centre were enormous. The private day centre was a godsend to us because it gave us a bit of respite, but
sure.
It also helped my dad.
Yes. Well, that's what I was saying before about it would be nice, I think, because my father had a dementia as well before he died, and he sounds similar to your father. In the end, he just kind of expired after a while, but he couldn't stay.
Yeah.
He couldn't stay at home anymore. His wife was still alive, but she was elderly, because he was like your dad. Mm. He kept wandering off. You know, police kept picking him up on the motorway and stuff and bringing him back. And in the end, it's very stressful for everybody involved, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Like, his entire interests in things just completely evaporated.
Yeah.
But when he went to the day centre, because he had that one-on-one, care all day in terms of just, I don't know, doing simple things like arts and crafts.
Sure.
And, you know, just playing with the ball. Like, he really came out of himself.
Yeah.
And he really enjoyed it there. We couldn't never put him into a care provision because I made that promise to my dad. But also, obviously, as you know, with dementia, when they have one big move from their home into a care home, their illness can just deteriorate rapidly because their surroundings change.
No, of course.
But
I just wonder... I just wonder whether some of these charities who collect so much money could use some of that money to set up centres like that, which could be used by people like yourselves and families like your own, but for maybe a bit less money.
I think so, definitely. And also, I think sometimes people do forget about the carers and kind of like what they are going through.
Yeah.
Because obviously it is so stressful for the actual person with dementia. But to see that person change into somebody completely different, and it's like that they've already passed, if that makes sense.
It's horrible,
and, like,
yeah. It's awful.
Grieving. Yeah.
It really is. It's hard to explain to people unless they've been through it.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're lucky in a way, Nicola, that you and the rest of your family came through it sort of unscathed, if they did, because a lot of families don't. A lot of families find that the stress and the pressure on them individually means that they end up breaking up in some way.
Yeah, that's very true. And my mother didn't never fully understood the full effect of dementia.
Mm.
So we would have very heated arguments about how to care for dad.
Right.
Because you just didn't understand. But more information and more education of people is really needed, because people don't understand. And when we were in public places, my dad used to like to wave and say hello to like kids and stuff, because he's a bit of a kid himself.
Sure.
But people would be very weary of him, and I always used to wear like a little dementia badge.
Right.
I'd be like, oh, it's okay. He's not, you know, he's not a predator. He's just...
I know.
Just
it's shocking, really.
Illness.
It's such a sad story, and it so often happens to... There'll be families listening to this, Nicola, now, I can promise you, who absolutely have had exactly the same experience. And it just seems to me that you could all help each other, and we could all help each other, if we were able to meet somewhere, talk somewhere, take our ageing relatives, and just have even a few hours respite, you know?
Yeah, the Alzheimer's Society do like cafes and things, and yeah. and they try and encourage carers and the dementia patients to go to them. But there's different. We did take Dad to one once in his better days,
yes.
and there's different degrees of different levels, if that makes sense, of where the illness is at. And my it was too much for my dad. He just he didn't like it at all. So we came away from there.
Right.
But definitely more awareness about day centres, that social services, there are provisions for people if they need day centres. These day centres are available through social services, but they're not very forthcoming with the information.
No, okay. Well, listen, Nicola, thank you so much for calling. It's a fantastic call, really heartfelt, and something that must, if you're listening to Nicola there, you must feel for everybody who has to go through what she went through. And you also, of course, have to have sympathy for the Alzheimer's patient or the dementia patient themselves, but the family as well. We definitely need to do something here. We can, I'm sure, come up with better ideas for care, even if it's temporary, for some of these families and for the way that they have to deal with it single-handedly on their own, sometimes because they don't have the money to do what Nicola did, even though, she was able to do so. Don't think everybody else can. We're going to talk now, though, to a gentleman by the name of Adrian Ogden, who's a resident of Whaley Bridge, the town that has been evacuated, of course, up there in Derbyshire because of the dangers of a reservoir bursting after a dam broke and basically was threatening to overrun the town with water and flooding. Adrian, a very good morning to you. Thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome, mate. How are you?
I'm very good. Now, you've been evacuated out of your home for quite a while now. How long since you've been in your own home?
Yeah, I left my home on Thursday morning, went to work, and then got the car around about 11.
But, right.
There was a serious problem with the dam, and chances are I was going to be allowed back to my house. And,
right.
And then about 2 o'clock when I finished work, I was told that I definitely couldn't go back.
Right.
So I've been staying with parents since then. I've not been... Well, I went back on Sunday night because I went to the residence meeting over at Chapel on the Frith. Just wanted to see what was going on, really,
okay.
and get a bit more information. But, yeah, I've not been back since.
So this is day 5, in other words. When do you think you're going to be allowed back in? There's a meeting today, I think, isn't there?
That's right, yeah, there is a meeting today. Hopefully there'll be more information. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think anybody really wants to say a definite time, because it could drag on a little bit longer. But by all accounts, the operation to drain the reservoir is coming on out of steam. Weather's sort of held back, so hopefully next day or two with a bit of luck.
Right.
But, we're perhaps looking at the weekend more.
And how have you coped? I mean, have you got enough stuff with you? Is it tricky? Have you got family? I mean, how does it work?
It's a nightmare. I mean, I left for work on Thursday morning, no idea what was going on.
Right.
What's going to happen? I literally had my uniform in my bag and a can of deodorant, that's it.
Mm.
I got to work and suddenly think, I haven't got a change of clothes, so I've been out on Friday, unfortunately, the day off on Friday, but bought some clothes, a phone charger, things like that, just essentials. I'm fortunate because I've got family not too far away and I can go and live with them and, they're putting up with me, I suppose, as much as I'm putting up with them. you just got to get on with it, haven't you? What can you do? It's one of them things.
Well, you must. And what about for people who don't have family nearby? Where are they all being put up then?
I think people have been put up in hotels over in Buxton. I know some people have been put up in hotels there. I'm not sure the financial implications of that to them at all. But I do know most people have got close family and are staying with various friends. And there's been a lot of offers of, people, local people from neighbouring towns and villages saying, listen, I've got accommodation. If you need something, give me a ring.
Yeah.
Send me a message. So there's a great... it does have a good spirit in that respect, the village. There's a lot of people prepared to help other people. So,
there's a couple of stories recently that must be slightly troubling. One, that there's some looters been spotted in the town who have come in and taken advantage of the fact that people are not in their homes. And also, a lot of people who have decided not to evacuate and have stayed in the town and have got quite a lot of sort of criticism from the police.
Well, they're going to get criticism from the police. I mean, when we were at the meeting, the police officer in charge, she did raise that point, saying, these people are putting themselves in danger. And now my rescue team are also in danger because they're going checking on them. And she's right, really. It's a free country, though. You can do whatever you want in this country. And if they choose to stay, they need to understand the implications and realise, they're endangering themselves and other people. But, like I say, it's a free country, so you can't force people to leave the house.
No, you can't. But I mean, the other, sorry, go on.
Well, with regards to the looting, somebody did raise that point at the meeting and just said, listen, you know, I've heard that there has been people spotted, you know, what's being done about it. And the police are telling us that they're flying drones over the village, trying to keep it, you know, keeping an eye on everything. So whether or not people are doing that, I'd like to think they're not, but unfortunately that's the world that we live in, and there's possibly a chance that some people are doing that.
Yeah, there is.
But like I said, you know, there's roadblock here. You know, I actually feel my particular property is probably safer now than it's ever been. You know, I've got the eyes of the national press all over the village, you know.
Well, exactly right. But I mean, the worry, I suppose, is, and some people have started to ask this question, is was it a bit, were they a bit overzealous and a bit kind of quick to get everybody to get out of the town? Because,
a
week now, we've been hearing that, you know, the floods may come, the dam has broken and the reservoir may be breached. They've been dropping sandbags and stuff like that. You know, I don't know whether if they say to you, you can now go back, are you going to feel like, well, nothing really happened?
Well, yeah, quite possibly, yeah. But I suppose they're in a no-win situation there, aren't they? You know, their actions would only be justified if that dam breaks and it washes through now. And they say, well, there you go, we did the right thing. You know, there's no way of knowing, is there? The weather were terrible last weekend. I mean, the week before it was glorious, and within 3 or 4 days, you know, that reservoir's, well, it's overflowing. So it was unprecedented, the weather. So... like I said, I don't really think there's any way of knowing, and they're obviously erring on the side of caution.
They are.
And they still are. You know, I wouldn't want to be the person responsible to say, OK, yeah, everything's fine, you can all go back to your properties now.
But the trouble is, I mean, I had the misfortune of having a house once in Wiltshire that flooded like 3 times in a week, and after a while, every time it rains, you're standing there looking out the window just going, is it going to happen again? I mean, will you now think about moving because you're...
Possibly. I mean... I don't really know. I possibly would think about it, but I'm not sure. You know, property prices might crash now because of this. You know, I can't sell my...
Well, that's the other problem. Yeah, you might find nobody wants to move in there because of this reservoir.
Correct. Yeah. So
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope that's not the case. Yeah. Listen, well, good luck, Adrian. Thanks so much for talking to us. There is a meeting later on this afternoon. We'll bring you the details of that around about 5 o'clock here on Talk Radio because, of course, the bottom line here is that the safety of the people living there is paramount. But if it turns out that we've got another situation here like we had at Gatwick, for example, last Christmas when there was a drone, there wasn't a drone. We don't know if there was a drone. There might have been a drone. It might have been our own drone, but we better shut the airport down for about a week. That is the sort of health and safety craziness that we don't need. Now, there will be those of you out there saying, oh, come on, Mike, you can't take chances with this kind of thing. And yes, that's true. But surely the point about this whole ridiculous story is that they should have been keeping the reservoir in good order before any of this happened. And this has happened purely and simply because the reservoir was actually dilapidated and had been completely and utterly abandoned and ignored for centuries or certainly decades. Nobody had done anything. There was grass growing out of it. And the dam wasn't fit for purpose. You know, the whole thing is a shambles. But if I was made to evacuate my property and live away for a week when it turned out that didn't need to be the case, I wouldn't be too happy about it. What a great song that is. Apologies to anyone who's a Hearts fan up in Edinburgh having to listen to that because, of course, it is the tune that rings around the Hibernians' Easter Road football ground when the season is in full swing. We're going to talk to Tommy Shepherd now, SNP MP for Edinburgh East. He'll know that song very well. Tommy, very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Thank you.
Of course, Hibs is in my constituency.
Yes, well, it's a great part of the world is Leith. I was up there, in fact, I stayed in Leith last time I was up there for the Edinburgh Festival because, of course, you're all terribly excited about this poll by Lord Ashcroft. I mean, who knew that the SNP and Lord Ashcroft would become bosom buddies?
Well, I wouldn't say we're bosom buddies. I wouldn't say I'm terribly excited. I mean, it is only one poll, but it is significant, I think, not just because it shows a majority support for the proposition of independence, but it also, for the first time, shows a clear majority of people saying that we should ask that question sooner rather than later. And in that sense, it does signal a change that's been taking place over the last few months in Scotland.
Yeah, I do keep hearing this from your fellow colleagues in the SNP. The only proviso I have, I'm only going to say this once and then we'll forget about it, is that a friend of mine who runs a polling company said that any poll with less than 2,000 people taking part in it is not really worth the paper it's written on. And this one has 1,019. So that's my slight sort of, you know, caveat, if you like, and not taking it too seriously.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, you know, we shouldn't... I mean, there's only one poll that matters at the end of the day, as people keep saying, and that's the ones in the ballot box.
Yes.
You know, but you know, they are an indicator of things. I mean, that sample size is about standard for an opinion poll. That's what Comrades and Ipsos Mori and the other...
That's why they keep getting it wrong. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the important thing about polls, Mike, is to look at the trends that are within them. And this poll signifies that there is a trend happening in Scotland where opinion is very much on the move.
Yes.
About the question.
Well, I mean, all I would say, Tommy, is, and I've spoken to many of your colleagues. Mr. Blackford's a regular guest on this show. Nicola Sturgeon has yet to come on, even though she keeps promising to do so. You'll have to have a word with her, please.
She's quite busy, Mike.
I know that, but you know, well, we're quite busy here as well. You know, don't forget. And I used to drink with her in Regano's, as you can remind her, many years ago. But here's the thing. Okay. The problem I get when I do a sort of a straw poll on Twitter, which is also not particularly scientific either, is I get an awful lot of people saying, yes, it's time, we're ready. But I also get about an equal number saying, you know, well, actually, no, they're not speaking for everybody in Scotland. And it's a bit like, I suppose you might say, the Leave and Remain situation. It's not much more than 50-50 at any one time, is it?
Yeah, look, I'm not disputing the fact opinion is divided. Of course there is. I mean, there's a large number of people who are not enamoured by the concept of independence at all. Some of them are probably never going to change their mind because they hold their opinions for, you know, for legitimate political and ideological reasons, and I'm not going to be able to persuade them. But there's quite a number of people now who voted no in 2014 against independence who are open to the idea in a way that they weren't before, because of the changes that are taking place in the United Kingdom, and particularly with relation to Brexit, because that's something, obviously, that, you know, where Scotland has a very dramatic difference of opinion with people in the rest of the United Kingdom.
Well, not everybody, some, right? I mean, it's 60-40, slightly bigger margin, but that's the other problem, isn't it?
No, Mike, it was 62-38 at the time, and if you look at the consistently at the opinion polls now, I mean, not just one, but all of them, you'll find it's more like 70-30 against leaving the European Union.
Yeah, well, that may well be. But the point is that as of at the moment, we are still part of the United Kingdom. If indeed, and many people now believe this will happen, you will get a leave scenario happening on the 31st of October. So by the 1st of November, we will be out of the European Union, do or die. Then there might be a general election. And then you can, I suppose, start agitating for another referendum.
Well, I mean, we had an election in Scotland in 2016. And all of the political parties here put their views in the second referendum. And it was very much a hot topic of that election campaign. And the SNP, with support from the Green Party, won a majority of seats in that election and formed the government at Holyrood. So I think, you know, the people have already been consulted on whether or not they do want another referendum in the Scottish question of Scottish independence. And they've said yes. So the irony is that actually the SNP government in Scotland has a mandate to go ahead with a referendum on the question of independence, but the Boris Johnson government in London does not have a mandate to go ahead with a hard deal or a no-deal Brexit.
Well, there's a sort of a mixed-up logic there, isn't there? Because you've just told us that there is now some kind of a mandate for a second referendum in Scotland, but the referendum we've already had gives him no mandate to leave the European Union.
It gives him no mandate to leave without a deal.
That's not true.
The people who campaigned to leave the EU and who won a slim majority in 2016 were saying that they wanted to leave in an orderly fashion, that they wanted
to
remain.
Yeah, they do. Well, that's what they're still saying. They're still saying that.
Well, really, it doesn't look like it at the moment from where we sit.
Well, it may not look like it, but they're still saying that they want to leave with a deal. But they're also saying that they will be prepared to leave without a deal if the European Union chooses to be intransigent and chooses not to be in any way helpful.
That's what Boris Johnson says, Mike, but you judge people by what they do.
Right.
And from the look of what he's actually done and his refusal to enter into discussions with the European Union and setting these, you know, quite impossible preconditions to any talks taking place, it looks like he is prepared to go ahead with a no-deal.
Well, he's not talking to them, Tommy, because they said they weren't going to negotiate, they weren't going to renegotiate. They said they would not reopen the withdrawal agreement. So what's the point of talking to them?
Well, no, Mike, he said... He said that he would only talk to the EU if they dropped the whole question of the Irish...
Yes, but that was after they said they wouldn't change the withdrawal agreement.
Well, you know, should he not actually be discussing this with them and see if...
Well, not after they've said they won't... Well, they've already said they won't... Well, no, they've said they won't discuss it. Therefore, he says, in that case, there's no point in us talking unless you're willing to drop the backstop.
Yeah, well, he's setting a precondition where he's set the outcome that he wants as a precondition for having talks, and that's not something that any negotiator...
Well, we'll be stuck on this for ages because they have set the precondition by saying they're not talking about it.
The point is that Boris Johnson doesn't represent people in Scotland with knobs on, and he is actually turbocharging the gulf between Scotland and the rest of the United Kingdom, and he is fueling the case for Scottish independence by every day he holds in office. Now, I want to...
Do you think he's working hand in glove with Lord Ashcroft? Maybe he's doing it deliberately.
No, I don't think. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, Mike. But let me say also, you know, our determination, of course, is to try and prevent Brexit happening, and certainly to prevent a no-deal Brexit happening. And when we get back in September into Parliament, we'll be working with other opposition parties to try and achieve that end.
Don't you think that's undemocratic, though, considering that the bulk of the people of Britain have voted to leave?
Well, I was elected to represent the people of Edinburgh East, and they gave me a very clear mandate what to do. They don't want Brexit, and they want me to vote against it. So that's what I will do. And if a majority in Parliament take that considered view, then we live in a parliamentary democracy, and that should count for something. My prediction...
Well, then you're working more towards getting a no deal than anybody in that case, because that's what's going to be the outcome.
Well, to be honest, my prediction would be that if that scenario appears to be the one that's going to happen, then Boris Johnson is likely to preempt that and dissolve Parliament and call an election himself. So I think we are 50-50 on for an October election at this point.
I think that's probably right. And the next thing he wants to do is to annex Scotland, give it independence, and that way Labour will never get into power ever again and the SNP will cease to be a problem in Westminster.
I'm not sure if annex is the term I would use. It'd be very interesting to see what the outcome of the general election would be in the United Kingdom. There's going to be all sorts of weird splits and realignments happening in England. And in Scotland, the SNP goes into the election in pole position and looking to increase our representation. And we shall certainly be demanding that the UK Parliament respect the right of the Scottish Parliament to consult people on their constitutional future, because at the end of the day, this decision isn't...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.